It's a root of all evil. A root, one of the roots. There are other roots of all evil. There's the love of power. There's the love of just sensual pleasures. They are roots of all evil, especially sexual pleasures can be a root of all evil. There be people who've killed their spouses in order to marry someone else. There are people who would do anything. They degrade themselves. There's the love of drugs and so on. But love of money is a root. It's one of the roots of all kinds of evil. Some people have prostituted their daughters. There are people who will lie, cheat, steal, use drugs or deal with drugs. Create false documents, identity theft, and so on. We saw that last time. The Pharisees, who were lovers of money, according to Luke chapter 16, scoffed at Jesus' statement that you cannot serve two masters. Now, Jesus said, you can't serve. Now, the word masters in the scriptures is the word kurios, which means Lord, owner. It's the same word. When we say the word Lord Jesus, we're saying kurios. When the Bible in the New Testament translates the word Yahweh from the Old Testament, it uses the word kurios, Lord. Jesus says, you can't serve two masters. And who are they? God and Mammon, Mammonus. And that means wealth. You can't serve God, things of wealth. If you serve them, they become like God. So you have God on this side, and then wealth on this side. You can't serve them both, Jesus said, and the Pharisees scoffed at that. In the New Testament, ministers must be free from the love of money. They have to be away from it. They can't be a part of the love of money. Now, we know that wealth itself is not sinful. We know that money is not the issue. It's the love of it that creates the problems that people have with it. It's loving it, wanting it, creating such a desire for it that you will do almost anything for it. Wealth is not sinful in itself unless it becomes the priority of your life. Then it turns into this thing that you serve. It becomes now a master. In the book of Psalms, chapter 52, Psalm 52, we read this. Behold, the man who would not make God his refuge, but trusted in the abundance of his riches, and was strong in his evil desires. Take a look at that man, he says. Behold that man. And in Psalm 62, verse 10, we are admonished, do not trust in oppression and do not vainly hope in robbery. If riches increase, do not set your heart upon them. If riches increase, is it okay to increase? Yes. But don't set your heart upon them and don't trust in them. Don't think that your riches are going to save you in the day of salvation or the day of wrath. Proverbs chapter 11, verse 28 says this. Proverbs is filled with good advice. He who trusts in his riches will fall. But the righteous will flourish like a green leaf. If you trust in the riches, you'll fall. Proverbs 23, verses 4 and 5. Do not weary yourself to gain wealth. How many people weary themselves? They're up all night. They're working 7 days. You know, they're working 18 hours a day. They weary themselves just to gain wealth. Cease from your consideration of it, says Proverbs 23, verse 4. And verse 5, and when you set your eyes on it, it is gone. For wealth certainly makes itself wings, like an eagle that flies toward the heaven. Wealth makes itself wings. All of a sudden, you set your mind on it. I want this. What kind of person is so subject to being hoodwinked, to being gypped, to being frauded, to being, you know, taken advantage of? Well, Proverbs 28, I think, tells us this. A faithful man, this is Proverbs 28, dropping down to verse 20. If you have a Bible in front of you, you can read it with me. Proverbs 28, verse 20. A faithful man will abound with blessings, But he who makes haste to be rich will not go unpunished. Get rich quick, right? Have we all heard of the get rich quick schemes? You don't get rich quick, you get rich slow. Verse 21, to show partiality is not good, because for a piece of bread a man will transgress. But verse 22, again, a man with an evil eye hastens after wealth, and he does not know that want will come upon him. So if you're, I want money, I want to get wealthy, and then, okay, here's a scheme, here's an idea, you'll fall for it, here's a way to get rich, you can make this kind of money, you can make that, but you have to invest this, you have to invest that. How many people have gotten taken to the cleaners because they didn't give their money away, they weren't trying to give it away, they got taken to the cleaners trying to get more money. And this is how you do it, because you hasten. For the person that wants, don't weary yourself, because you set your eyes upon it. Wealth will flee away. Yeah, who hastens to be rich, that's what happens. Now, when Job was talking, he said, in Job chapter 31, beginning in verses 24 and 25, he says, if I have put my confidence in gold and called fine gold my trust, if I have gloated because my wealth was great. Now, Job was very, very wealthy, but he never put his trust in it. He didn't gloat over it. He didn't, I've done great, I've done well, and because my hand had secured so much. He said, I never gloated over my wealth and because my hand had gotten me so much. He was evidently very diligent, very smart, very wise in the way he went about his work. And God had blessed him tremendously. He was blessed. Now, I don't care how good you are. I don't care how smart you are. I don't care how talented you are. You still have to have blessings. See, what Nebuchadnezzar didn't know was that God gave him blessings. If God doesn't give you good health, a mind that works right, stamina, energy, I don't care how talented you are. If you're crippled in a bed, if you're paralytic, if you are now got some kind of dementia, it doesn't matter how talented you are. You're not going to make it. You're not going to have this wealth. So even the greatest and the most successful have to give God thanks for their good health, for their eyesight, for hearing, for the blessings, for the mind to think with, for the body that works well. So God can give us blessings with this. So Nebuchadnezzar failed to see that. He said, my hand, I've done it all. So Job said, no, I never put my confidence in it. He always attributed, God gave it and God can take it away, even though he worked hard. Now, when you come to wealth and money, again, we're saying that wealth by itself is not bad. It's putting trust in it that's bad, and it's the love of it that becomes bad. Serving it. Wealth has a different perspective. In the Proverbs give us probably one of the more unique perspectives on the subject of wealth, because it's placed in the arena of personal effort. Sloth and laziness in the Proverbs is condemned. Let's read a few Proverbs and give you the idea here. Proverbs chapter 10, verse 4. Poor is he who works with a negligent hand. Oh, I forgot this. Oh, I was careless about this. Negligence. You just neglect it. But the hand of the diligent makes rich. He who gathers in summer is a son who acts wisely. This is verse 5. This is Proverbs 10, verses 4 and 5. But he who sleeps in harvest is a son who acts shamefully. So again, it's the shameful to just sleep during the time when you're supposed to be out. There's the harvest. You can get it. You can have it. But a person who works with a negligent hand will be poor. Proverbs 6 and verses 9 through 11. How long will you lie down? Now in verse 8 it said, go to the ant, thou sluggard, you know. But in verse 9, how long will you lie down, O sluggard? In the Bible it's sort of insulting here. It's a sluggard. When will you arise from your sleep? A little sleep, a little slumber, a little folding of the hands to rest, and your poverty will come in like a vagabond and your need like an armed man. You sleep away the times when it's time to work, and poverty will come your way. These are admonitions. These are directions. Now, does that mean that everyone who works hard and diligently will be rich? No, not but these are general pieces of wisdom. Gathering all the wisdom, would you say that if you work harder, you know, in psychology we have a thing called attribution theory, and it has to do with how you attribute your successes. Generally, there's a paradigm of four things. There are four things that can be. It can be effort, the difficulty of the task, a thing called luck, and ability. Effort, ability, task difficulty, and luck. Those are the, if you boiled down to four main big categories. The effort and the ability are internal, correct? They're both internal things. How much effort I put into the work I do, that's internal. I have control of that. Ability, that's internal. Whatever ability I have, that's my internal. Task difficulty, how difficult the work is, and luck, or the various things, you know, being there at the right time, seeing the right person. You know, there are people, there are millions of people who are more talented than some of the actors you see on the screen, more beautiful than many of the actresses you see on the screen, more talented and handsome than many of the actors you see on the screen, that they just weren't at the right place at the right time. They didn't get what we call, quote, discovered. You have to meet somebody, see somebody, get through it. So there's a whole bunch of factors in this area called luck, okay? Task difficulty and luck are external, are they not? Internal are effort and ability. External are task difficulty and luck. Ability, let me put ability and task difficulty are not variable. Whatever the task difficulty is, it's stable. These are stable areas. And your ability generally is stable. Effort is unstable. I can put more effort, and luck is unstable. We don't know what is going to happen over here. You can't control it. Now, what they do, psychologists say, when people succeed, and they ask you, how is it that you succeeded? If you say, I succeeded because I worked hard, then you're attributing your success to an internal thing. I worked hard and I'm smart and I have the ability. Now you're attributing, your attribution then is to, you're attributing your success to two internal factors. Ability and effort. One is stable, ability is stable, and effort is unstable. That is, you can vary up and down how much effort you put into a task. If, however, you succeed and someone asks you, how is it that you did well on this, in this project, and you say, well, it was easy. It was easy to do. And I think I lucked out because, I mean, you know, my boss just, you know, gave me an opportunity. I lucked out. You now are attributing your success to external factors. You left out your effort. You left out your ability. You're saying, well, it was easy to do. As psychologists study this, they say that as you attribute your success to external factors, the people who do that, you know, there used to be a kind of a proverb that goes like this, nothing succeeds like success. You ever hear that phrase? That's not true to the people who attribute their success to external factors. When you attribute your success to external factors, it was easy to do, I lucked out, then you don't do well. That's it. Now let's go to a person who fails. Okay, now we're going to take the failure. You try something and it fails. People who are more internal in their attributions might say, well, I should have worked harder at it. I didn't work as hard. I didn't put as much time into it as I could have. I didn't work as hard at it. If they say that, if they attribute their failure to internal factors, especially the unstable internal factor of effort, guess what they'll do next time? If you're attributing your failure to a lack of effort, what will you do next time if you want to succeed? You will put more effort. You will work harder. But if you are of the external orientations, then you will say, well, and you attribute your failure to, well, the task was too hard. And a lot of those people actually attribute their failure to a lack of ability. I don't think I'm smart enough, or I don't think I have what it takes. I don't. You know. And when you attribute your failure to a lack of ability, then you're going to get very discouraged, very depressed, very discouraged, and you won't put it. And if you don't attribute it to lack of effort, rather you attribute it to lack of ability more than lack of effort, then guess what's going to happen? You get discouraged and you just assume it, that it's. And then when you succeed, you just say, well, it was easy. Well, it was easy and I lucked out. If you attribute your successes or failures to whether how much effort you put into it, generally, then you're going to come back to the same conclusion as the Proverbs. See, a person who works diligently, what's he going to do? The soul of the sluggard craves, this is Proverbs 13, verse 4, the soul of the sluggard craves and gets nothing, but the soul of the diligent is made fat. The diligent, the hard worker. Listen to this one, Proverbs 15, verse 19. The path of the lazy is like a hedge of thorns, but the way of those who do right is a clear road. Lazy is considered bad in the Proverbs. Proverbs 18, verse 9. Those who are lazy in their work. I'm reading this from the Common English Bible. The Common English Bible. Listen to this phrase. Those who are lazy in their work are brothers to thugs. That's how they translate. Are brothers to thugs. Now the reason is that the Hebrew participle, meaning showing oneself slack, those who are lazy, that's the Hebrew participle. It means the verb means to sink or relax. You know, when I show myself slack, I'm just relaxed, I'm just lazy. See, the causative, that means to let your hands drop, the Hebrew word implies. Like, and then there are two troubling types, the slacker and the destroyer. They're closely related. In Hebrew, that phrase is a possessor of destruction. The idiom then means a destroyer. You have the word destroyer in the King James Version. In the New Revised Standard Version, they translate that rather than thugs, they translate that a vandal. Because it means someone who destroys, hurts. Okay, the person who is lazy, okay, in their work are like, laziness and destroying are like two things. Like they're very associated, because you're going to destroy something when you're lazy. Proverbs 15, verse 19 says, laziness brings on deep sleep. and a slacker goes hungry. Let me read it in the complete Jewish Bible. Laziness makes people fall asleep, and an idle person will go hungry. Idle. You just, have nothing to do, don't have anything to say, don't go anywhere, I don't get up for a job, I don't do anything. So if you, laziness makes people fall asleep. Why is that? Because they got nothing to do. They got nothing to live for. They got no goals. They got no intentions. That's why it's important to have goals ahead of you. Even physical, temporary in this life. Important to have them. All right, so you have these statements about soul. The word laziness means the soul of slackness. The soul of slackness beguiles you. You grow loose. You go sleepy. So it causes deep sleep. Deep sleep on one hand and growing hungry on the other. So laziness makes people fall asleep. The idle person will go hungry. That same situation. You have these proverbs are often put in these double lines for boiling down great wisdom. Boiling down. Okay, verse 24, Proverbs 19 and verse 24. A person who doesn't, I'm reading this from the New International Revised Version. A person who doesn't want to work leaves his hand in the dish. He won't even bring it back to his mouth. This is a complete exaggeration. You have to understand the humor and the fact. You're so lazy, you put your hand down into the dish and you won't even bring it up. You got your spoon and fork down there, but you can't even bring it up to your mouth. You grab the meat, but you're too lazy to put it in your mouth. That's the proverb. And it's meant as humor, but it's meant as this cutting humor that's supposed to give you a realization of laziness is not approved. Proverbs 20 and verse 4, the sluggard does not plow after the autumn. Now, after the autumn, you just harvest. Autumn is harvest time, right? What are you supposed to do after harvest? You got to get the fields ready. You got to get the soil ready for the next planting. The sluggard does not plow after the autumn. So what? He begs during the harvest and has nothing. So he's going to beg the next harvest. If you don't plow after the reaping of this harvest, what are you going to do in the next harvest? Now, poverty versus riches is used to illustrate in many ways in the Proverbs. It's used to illustrate righteousness versus wickedness. In the Proverbs, poverty is not good. Okay? It's like wickedness. Righteousness is like wealth. Now, I'm just giving you this position from the Proverbs. This is not necessarily the New Testament, because you have poor Christians, you have people that have other things. But in the Proverbs, the idea that you're probably not working, and we're talking about able-bodied people. Nobody's going to say, condemn somebody that just, you've got a disease, you've got you're crippled, you're hurt, you've got some other problems, and you can't work. Nobody's condemned that. The Bible's talking about able-bodied people. So in Proverbs 28, verses 19 and 20, it says, he who tills his land will have plenty of food, but he who follows empty pursuits will have poverty in plenty. A faithful man will abound with blessings, but he who makes haste to be rich will not go unpunished. How do you get rich? You get rich slow. You get rich little by little. You get rich moment by moment over the years, not jump to the top. Now, some people do, but easy come, guess what happens? Easy go. In the Proverbs here, if you till your land, you'll have plenty of food. Now, are these Proverbs absolute? No, they're not absolute. These are the general wisdom. These are generally. So if I work hard, will I succeed? Probably. Probably. And if I fail and I attribute my failure to lack of effort, what will I do next time? I'll work harder. Now, over the time of working harder, and I attribute my failure to maybe I could have worked harder and then that, guess what will happen? In the percentages, the harder I work and the more I work and the harder I work, guess what's going to happen to me? I'll probably succeed. If you attribute your failure to lack of effort mostly, then what'll happen is you work harder and you work harder, and guess what happens when you work hard? You'll probably succeed. But is it an absolute? No. You can work hard in an industry that's not a good industry. I knew a man that worked very hard in a particular industry, and something else came in and knocked it out, and he was working really hard and it just didn't go anywhere. He's a very hard worker, extremely hard worker, and a capable businessman, but he had the wrong industry. You get in the wrong industry and, you know, it doesn't go. And the vicissitudes of life, you know, the variables come in and can knock you down too. I mean, you never know. But generally, we will say he who works and tills his land, the person that works hard will probably succeed and be blessed. The Bible talks about how important wisdom is. And wisdom means knowing God and his word and living with this knowledge. And that is better than riches. If you know God and his word and you live according to God's word and with that knowledge, that's better than the riches that you might obtain. So here's what it says in Proverbs 3, verse 13. How blessed is the man who finds wisdom. That's Proverbs 3 and verse 13. And the man who gains, and use the word man, anybody, it means any person, man or woman. How blessed is the person who finds wisdom and the person who gains understanding. For her profit, meaning wisdom's profit, is better than the profit of silver. And her gain, her wisdom and understanding, is better than fine gold. She is more precious than jewels. And nothing you desire compares with wisdom and understanding. If you think you're going to go after the physical and that first, you're making a serious mistake. Get the wisdom, get the understanding, and who gets it? You have to love it. You have to want it. You ask God for it. God, give me wisdom. God is willing to do it. Because the New Testament says, God will. If you say I lack wisdom, God, give me wisdom. God will give it. But then you can't just sit and say, I want wisdom, and God just hand it to me, when you don't really pursue it. Now, when I wanted to learn the Bible, and I really wanted to. And I pursued it, and I bought books, and I bought Bibles, and I bought understanding, and I took Greek course, and I actually wanted to learn more about the Bible. So when you want to, you will pursue it. When you want wisdom, what will you be doing? You will be reading those Proverbs over and over. You will read them. You will meditate on them. You'll read them in different translations. You'll understand them. You will want to know them. You will pursue wisdom in other areas. I mean, Proverbs is not the only wisdom in the world, but it's a great wisdom in the world. But there are wisdom for that you can learn when you read people's biographies, when you read other things, and you get the lessons of life from other people. You can get lessons of wisdom, understanding, and ideas. Yes, how blessed is the man who finds it. Proverbs 8, verse 10. Take my instruction and not silver. And knowledge rather than choicest gold. For wisdom is better than jewels, and all desirable things cannot compare with her. Wisdom is better than jewels, and all desirable things. Yeah, If you ask the average person, would you rather have this new car or this book on wisdom? You know, they'll take the new car every time. We're a materialistic society. They don't care. And they'll use the car for a while, and then it'll run down, and it'll get broken, and they'll have to repair it. But they don't have the wisdom, and then they won't. They would rather have that than knowledge and wisdom. So take my instruction, not silver. You ask some person, would you rather have instruction or silver? Oh, I'm giving the silver. And would you rather have knowledge or gold? Oh, I'll have gold. Now, you know, here's the neat thing. When you go after wisdom and understanding and knowledge, you'll probably end up with silver and gold. But if you go after silver and gold, you probably won't end up with it. Eventually, you'll lose it, and you won't end up with the knowledge and the wisdom to deal with it. Proverbs 8, dropping down to verse 17 now in the book of Proverbs. Now, in the book of Proverbs 8, you have wisdom is personified. You understand? They made wisdom into a person and personified her. And so wisdom says in verse 17, I love those who love me. Isn't that interesting? I love those who love me. Wisdom loves you if you love her. And when you love her, what does that mean? I will go after wisdom. I want to seek her. I want to work for her. I want to try to develop. I want to find her. I'm trying to find her. I search for her. I love those who love me. And listen to the rest of it. And those who diligently seek me will find me. It's not just a matter of asking. You can ask for wisdom and God will grant you that. But part of the granting of the wisdom God grants you is the wisdom to know how valuable wisdom is and to seek it. Riches and honor are with me. Where do you get it? Riches and honor. Now, you can get riches without any honor, and there are a lot of people who are rich, they're just scoundrels, and they're not honorable people. Enduring wealth and righteousness, they're with him. That's they're with wisdom. My fruit is better than gold, even pure gold. And my yield better than choicest silver. I walk in the way of righteousness. In the midst of the paths of justice, to endow those who love me with wealth, that I may fill their treasuries. The Eternal possessed me at the beginning of his way, before the works of old. So wisdom is personified. Wisdom is speaking. Wisdom is here telling you that her way, if you love her, if you want to find her, if you seek for her diligently, you'll find her. And in her are the treasures, riches and honors, enduring things. And she wants to fill us with the treasuries. She wants to do that. As you have wisdom, you have good sense about things. A good sense of what to do here and what not to do. And you're getting, and by the way, remember how foolish is the man who doesn't get any counsel? You get counsel from the people who know. And you go to people who know and get counsel rather than making your own decision on your own and headstrong. That's a disaster. That's a formula for disaster. Proverbs 13, verse 18. Poverty and shame come to those who don't care about instruction. I'm reading that from the Common English Bible. Honor belongs to those who heed correction. Let me read that in the Complete Jewish Bible translation. Complete Jewish Bible goes like this. Poverty and shame are for him who won't be taught, but he who heeds reproof will be honored. No, when somebody teaches you, you say, well, I did it like this. And they say, well, oh, no, let me show you how to do it. And you say, okay, show me. You're number one, you're taking correction right there. Somebody's going to show you what to do next. That's correction. It's correction to you. You're saying, well, correct me. You know, you don't have to be scolded to be corrected. Being taught a better way, being taught instruction, teaching better things, that's correction. So he says, poverty and shame to him who won't be taught. You won't take correction. You won't get any instruction. It's poverty will come to you and shame will come to you when you won't listen. Who heeds reproof will be honored. Riches and wisdom seem to go together. There are warnings in the Proverbs about traps, financial traps, making a decision that traps you and you get in trouble with this decision. And one of the first ones is Proverbs 6, verses 1 through 5. This is a very famous one, and you've read it many times, I'm sure. Proverbs 6, 1 through 5. My son, could be my daughter, could be my friend, it could be anybody. My son, if you become surety for your neighbor, if you've given a pledge for a stranger, if you have been ensnared by the words of your mouth. Now, what's surety mean? It means you're a guarantor. You're guaranteeing this person's debt. Proverbs 11, verse 15 makes it plain. I'm reading from the Common English Bible in Proverbs 11, verse 15. Same. It'll throw light on Proverbs 6 now. Guaranteeing the debt of a stranger brings big trouble, but the one who refuses to shake hands is secure. Shake hands means, you're right, I'll guarantee it, don't worry about it, it'll be on me, I'll stand behind you. The Complete Jewish Bible reads it like this: he who guarantees a loan for a stranger will suffer, but refusing to underwrite is safe. So let's go back to Proverbs 6. My son, my daughter, my friend, my brother, whatever it is, if you become surety, that is, you're guaranteeing your neighbor's debt, if you have given a pledge for a stranger, if you have been snared with the words of your mouth, if you have been caught with the words of your mouth, do this then, my son, and deliver yourself, since you have come into the hand of your neighbor. In other words, you are now trapped. You are like a prisoner. You have lost all your power. You're now totally subject. Do this, my son. Deliver yourself, since you have come into the hand of the neighbor. Go humble yourself and importune your neighbor. Beg, plead. Say, hey, let me out of this. I can't do this. Give no sleep to your eyes, nor slumber to your eyelids until that's done. Deliver yourself like a gazelle from the hunter's hand and like a bird from the hand of the fowler. Get out of that agreement. Proverbs 17, verse 18, one with no sense shakes hands on a deal, securing a loan for a friend. That's Common English Bible. Complete Jewish Bible goes like this: he who gives his hand to guarantee a loan for his neighbor lacks good sense. I'll guarantee it. Yeah, don't worry about it. I have counseled with people over the years. They've done it for their son or their daughter. They've done it for a friend. They've done it for a relative. My brother needs it. I told him, okay, you can use my credit. Well, he's not paying the bill. In one case, it was a father who guaranteed, here's the credit card, I stand behind it, it's my credit card, you spent. And the son ran up all these debts, and he's got to pay it. And then he's mad, he's upset, he's got no power, he agreed to it, it's all in his name, and now the bills are coming to him, because the son doesn't pay it. Now what happens? In some cases, the debt is not paid, and then your credit goes down, and they're coming knocking on your door, and you've got troubles, and you can't afford to pay it. Listen to Proverbs 22, verse 26. Do not be among those who give pledges, among those who become guarantors for debts. If you have nothing with which to pay, why should they take your bed from under you? That's from the New American Standard Version. But here's the thing. If you get wisdom and you use your wisdom and you gain wealth, now you don't go after wealth. What you do, you go after wisdom and knowledge. And in the process, you work hard. Now everyone has to work. You have to work. You have to work. And you work hard at what you do, whatever it is you do. If you work hard at it, guess what will happen to you? Generally, what? Generally, you will gain wisdom, or you gain wealth. And if you want wealth, you're going to live within your means so that you have left over. Live within your means. Don't be on your means. If you live within your means, you'll have savings and you'll be able to put that away. And that will work for you. That will work for you eventually. And it's the get rich slow scheme. You work hard, you live within your means, you go and seek wisdom and knowledge and understanding, you get more instruction, you get more understanding, you get more skills in your profession, whatever profession you are, get more skills in it. And that is a formula that will lead to your success. Is it guaranteed? Well, no, anything can happen. But generally, the probability is on your side. The probability is that you will win, that you will do well if you follow those admonitions. We'll talk more about wealth, the warnings, and the other things that go with it in our next sermon.